But the review of those replacement window details is really important to National Park Service and to the SHPAs for their historic tax credit reviews. So there's usually tolerance of however many quarter of an inch or half an inch in the actual details of how these windows are going to look. And so a lot of our effort, windows, for example, we're working with our developer clients and their architects and sometimes their window manufacturers directly.
Welcome to Buzz House, a Baker Tilly podcast where you can hear all the buzz around multifamily housing with all the info you need to help you win now and anticipate tomorrow. Hi, I'm Don Bernards, the partner in charge of Baker Tilly's multifamily housing practice.
And I'm Gary Gibson, a partner at Baker Tilly, also specializing in consulting on multifamily housing transactions across the country.
Let's get started. Today, our guests on the Buzz House are friends at Ramsey Historic Consultants, Emily Ramsey and John Kramer. Thank you both for joining us today. Ramsey Historic Consultants is a Chicago-based historic preservation consulting firm specializing in the research and evaluation of properties for historic preservation financial incentives. Derek and I will be talking with Emily and John today on the importance of preserving historic buildings and how they'll help developers navigate the complexity of applying for state and federal historic tax credit incentives. Now, Garrick and I are very excited to jump into our discussion with Emily and John. I can turn it over to Garrick.
Thanks for that introduction, Don, and Emily and John, great to have you on. Before we jump in with some questions, why don't you give our listeners some insight into your background and work with the Ramsey Historic Consultants?
Thanks so much for having us, Garrick and Don. As you said, my name is Emily Ramsey, and I'm a principal with Ramsey Historic Consultants. We're a Chicago-based historic preservation consulting firm, and my sister Laura Ramsey and I established the company in 2014 after going to graduate school in Chicago in historic preservation. We both grew up in North Carolina and then moved to Chicago, and both of us have worked as historic researchers and tax credit consultants for nearly 20 years now.
Thank you guys for having us. It's our first foray into podcasts, our first podcast appearance. So we're really excited. I'm Emily's colleague, John Kramer, also with Ramsey Historic Consultants. I grew up in South Louisiana, and I'm also a transplant to Chicago. My professional background is in architecture and design, but I've worked primarily as a preservation and historic tax credit consultant for the last decade. I've been working with Emily as a work colleague, I guess, a decade now, and I just joined Ramsey Historic Consultants as a director in February of 2023.
We're so happy to have you.
Happy to be here.
So a little bit about what we do. What is a preservation consultant? Most of what John and I do is basically helping building owners and developers who are seeking federal historic rehabilitation tax credits. That's a financial incentive for rehabilitating historic buildings. And the acronym that it's usually known by is HTC. So you'll hear us use a lot of acronyms. But historic tax credits are part of a federal program, and it's administered jointly by the National Park Service and the IRS. And it offers developers who are making substantial investments into rehabbing historic properties in a sensitive manner that meets the standards for income producing use. It offers a federal income tax credit that equals 20% of qualified rehab expenses. In short, it's basically a project's hard and soft costs used to rehab the envelope and the interior of the building itself. And we primarily work as a liaison between the developer rehabbing a building and the historic reviewers with federal and state governments who review and approve that work. Specifically at the feds, we represent rehab projects to reviewers at the National Park Service with the Technical Preservation Services team. And at the state level, each state and territory has its own state historic preservation office. We call them SHPOs or SHPOs, depending on what state you're in. And they also review historic tax credit applications. And again, you'll hear us using a lot of acronyms. So HTCs are historic tax credits. NPS is National Park Service. SHPO is State Historic Preservation Office. And these two entities review both federal and state historic tax credits. And it's key to have good communications and partnerships with these entities. It's really the key. You have to go through them to get a successful historic tax credit rehab.
And in addition to the 20% federal historic tax credit program, most individual states offer their own state historic tax credit programs, which can be even more helpful in getting projects off the ground in those states. The amount of state historic tax credit funding available in these individual states and then what those programs require and what their application processes look like can vary pretty widely from state to state. But in general, the developers we work with pursue state historic tax credits alongside their federal historic tax credit application. So combining state and federal historic tax credits really boost their historic rehab funding. In some cases, developers can choose to pursue only state historic tax credits, but it all just really depends on the state you're working with and the developer and their project and their needs. We are not attorneys. We are not accountants. We focus primarily on helping our developers interface with SHPAs and with the National Park Service on these historic tax credit applications. So our clients and Emily and I, we rely on experts like you guys, Garrick and Don, to help our clients approach the accounting and the financial side of these historic tax credit deals. So what our team at Ramsey Historic Consultants brings to the table is expertise in getting historic buildings listed in the National Register of Historic Places, which is a requirement of these historic tax credit programs. All federal and state historic tax credit rehabs require that the buildings be listed in the National Register of Historic Places. So we also assist our developer clients in the application process, and we help them make sure that they're meeting National Park Service design standards for these rehabs.
Perfect. Thank you both, Emily and John, for that overview of what you do and kind of the overall program. You're kind of stepping back and looking back, the big picture. Why is historic preservation important? What are the benefits of preserving these historic buildings? Maybe, Emily, I'll start with you on that.
Sure. That's a great question. I was a history major in college. What do you do with a history degree? So I found a good niche for that. But I think from a cultural standpoint, historic buildings and historic sites are just physical reminder of the past. And it's a great way of understanding history. It's very tactile and immediate. You can see it right in front of you. Everyone feels that sense of place when they walk through a neighborhood of old houses or along a revitalized main street. And sometimes it's the most modest, it's not just about architecture, but sometimes the most modest or unassuming buildings that tell the greatest stories. I think of the Tenement Museum in New York City or the Emmett Till House in Chicago, where it's not the actual architecture itself, but the history of those buildings and what went on in those buildings and what it can tell us about the past and how far we've come. But I think what's often overlooked is the economic impact of historic preservation. And rehabilitation projects can take a vacant or an underutilized building and it brings them back to useful service. It creates jobs, it enhances property values and generates tax revenues for state and local governments. And communities that retain their historic character benefit because they're usually where most people want to live and they can become destinations where people want to go and spend money on vacations, and it creates tourism dollars for communities. And I also think sustainability is a huge benefit. Historic preservationists like to say that the greenest building is the one that's already built. It really captures the idea that existing buildings contain a huge amount of what we call embodied energy, and it's wasted when we demolish and build new. And historic buildings can be retrofitted to be operationally efficient with new heating, cooling, lighting, insulation. And because historic buildings are typically made of really long-lasting and durable and repairable materials, they'll have a longer life cycle than typical new construction.
Thanks, Emily. That was great. And John, I guess we can start with you too. Like, having worked on structuring and financing hundreds of historic transactions, I understand the complexities that exist at that point in the process. But can you touch on the early stage process with applying for the various state and federal tax credit incentives and the various regulatory requirements that are involved? And also, like, why is it important to involve your group in this actual process?
Right. So first, the application process for federal and state historic tax credits can be very complicated. And so the earlier our clients get us involved or, you know, another qualified historic preservation consultant involved, the better. So it's important first to work with a qualified historic tax credit consultant who has experience with the federal historic tax credit program and relevant state historic tax credits. It's also very important to find out right off if the building is historically significant enough to qualify for historic tax credits. And is the building you're looking at rehabbing on the National Register of Historic Places already? Is it individually listed already? Or maybe it's in a historic district? Has the state that you're working in already looked at a building like this and determined it eligible for National Register listing? If not, if this building has not yet been determined National Register listed or National Register eligible, there are a few extra steps needed to research the building and to see if it might be eligible for a National Register listing. And then we start that National Register listing process before investing too much time and energy into a historic tax credit application. So we want to make sure that a developer first is talking, in addition to the National Register piece, also that they're talking to the right legal and accounting teams to make sure that the rehab work will meet the federal and state programs that are minimum spending requirements, and also to make sure the developer starts the work of finding an investor who will help them monetize these federal and state historic tax credits ahead of time so they can actually use the money to complete the rehab work. Also, we like to get in a room as early as possible with the developer and their architect and their contractors and their engineers. The National Park Service's historic tax credit reviews touch on nearly all elements of a rehab design. So a big misconception with these programs is that they're really only concerned about exterior work, that you can just do whatever you want on the interior. While there's a certain amount of flexibility allowed on the inside of these historic buildings and these historic rehabs, the National Park Service and the SHPOs are very much concerned about both exterior and interior work on these projects. So the exterior work we're concerned with is masonry repair, replacement, window repair and replacement. Also how the rehab will look on the inside and in historically important interior spaces like lobbies and stairwells, upper floor corridors, really anything inside the building, any spaces or features that make the building special. It's never fun or easy to have to go back once you've taken the project design down the road quite a ways and then have to reel back and try to change a rehab project's design scope to fit into the federal and state historic tax credit design standards. So many of these important design and financing decisions are made right at the beginning of the rehab project. So we want to be there. You want your historic tax credit consultant at the table with you as soon as possible once a developer decides to pursue a project. And in many cases, we are there even as the developer is looking at potential opportunities. We want to be there as early as possible. And it's very much in our clients' interests to get us involved as well.
Great. Thank you, John. That's some great feedback and insight. Emily and John, thinking through this process, right? There's so many components. I mean, a lot of times from Garrick and I perspective on the numbers, it's like you guys do your work and you do fantastic work, but I know there's hurdles and obstacles. So what are some of those common challenges and obstacles that you, historic preservation consultants, face when working through these projects?
Yeah, I think most of the challenges that we face and our clients face in historic tax credit rehab projects really stems from the fact that the National Park Service speaks a very different language than most developers and architects and contractors, unless they've got a lot of experience with historic tax credit projects. We, John and I also always do say the first time a developer does historic project is that's the big hurdle. And then once they've got one under their belt, it's a lot easier going forward just because everybody understands the lay of the land. And then you're not as surprised about the Park Service requirements. John and I effectively serve as translators to get everyone on the same page regarding what the National Park Service is going to require in terms of a historic rehab. And I always give the example of MEP systems, mechanical, electrical, plumbing systems, which are probably the bane of my existence. It kind of windows or MEP systems, it depends, but they're a good example because a contractor will logically want to run pipes and ducts and conduits along the easiest, most straightforward routes. It's cheaper and it's faster. It's more efficient. It makes sense for most projects, but not for historic rehabs. If you're using the historic tax credits, the goal is to avoid significant interior spaces, to keep the ceiling heights intact and not damage any historic fabric, cornices, trim. And so new ducts and pipes and conduit can't just go wherever. And sometimes that's a really hard problem to solve. That's just one example.
I'd also say that the challenges we see in historic tax credits can often come from the minutia. So National Park Service reviews can go to a pretty granular level on some items, not always, but on some items. So for example, replacement windows are very important. If a building has historic windows that are in poor shape and need to be replaced, or if you need to replace non-historic windows, you need to go back and bring back a new window product that looks like the original windows, which is really makes a difference in the look of these historic tax credit rehabs. But the review of those replacement window details is really important to National Park Service and to the SHPAs for their historic tax credit reviews. So there's usually tolerance of however many quarter of an inch or half an inch in the actual details of how these windows are going to look. And so a lot of our effort, windows, for example, we're working with our developer clients and their architects, and sometimes their window manufacturers directly. We put a lot of effort into making sure that details like those are correct right off the bat before we even submit them to SHPO and National Park Service review, so that we're going to avoid delays in the review process. If a window doesn't look right to National Park Service, it's going to get sent back and we're going to have to go back to the drawing board. But with all this said, communication with our clients and their team, so architects, contractors, engineers, interior designers even, communication with this team between us and that team is critical. It's absolutely critical during construction and the whole construction process. So from beginning, even before construction begins, all the way to the end. So something changes during construction. So sometimes major changes occur. We're working with historic buildings. You never know what you're going to find once you start doing demolition and start poking around in the buildings. There are often changes that happen during construction. Sometimes developers and contractors see these new conditions and they think, nope, let's change it. No big deal. Let's change the scope. But sometimes even these smaller changes can sometimes be a big deal for reviewers at the National Park Service and the SHPAs we work with. So most of our federal and state reviewers that we work with are very easy to work with, easy to communicate with, and would prefer that we be proactive and that we ask important questions about potential changes right up front. We always tell our clients, no question during design or during construction is too small. Bare your soul to your historic tax credit consultant. Share as much as you can during the design and construction process. One thing I think we should add, we're probably scaring some of the listeners. Sometimes this can get complicated, but as you had said earlier, Emily, it's often the first project that these developers do, the first historic tax credit project the developers do, is the difficult one. We definitely see as the developers we work with begin to do 2, 3, 4, we do have a lot of repeat clients who come to really love doing these projects. And it gets a lot easier once you kind of shift your mindset to a different way of looking at historic buildings and historic rehabs.
Yeah. And I would say that having a good architect, a good team can go a long way. We've had projects where architects and developers have never worked on a tax credit project before. But as long as you're open to creative solutions and have your ducks in a row and have a good team, the tax credit process doesn't have to be difficult. It really comes down to, again, having the right team, being flexible, recognizing that you're going to have to make some compromises, but that the goal is ultimately to get the tax credit and to get your program in the building. And we're living proof at dozens of projects that it's an attainable goal.
Well, I mean, that leads into my next question, Emily. So what advice would you give to property owners who want to preserve historic building? Like, are there any common misconceptions about historic preservation that maybe you'd like to address?
Yeah, I think the most common misconception is that historic preservation is about preserving a historic building in amber or bringing back every detail to its original appearance. The federal tax credit program is designed to encourage rehabilitation, which is different than restoration, rehabilitation and adaptive reuse. There's room for restoration if an owner wants to go that extra mile. It's certainly welcome. The National Park Service will love it, but it's not a requirement for a rehabilitation project. And so rehabilitation, as defined by the Park Service, is really about keeping the important historic characteristics of a building that allow you to kind of understand how the building historically functioned while allowing changes and modernization to bring the building back to useful service. And on the flip side of that, in our industry, most developers who haven't utilized these programs before assume that the exterior is only important. And I think John touched on this before. the most common question or the most common misconception at the beginning of projects with developers that haven't worked on these projects before is, we're going to keep the exterior. It's great. We're good to go. But for the tax credits, interiors are important too. So we never use the term gut rehab. And sometimes the greatest challenge in these projects is working around those interior elements. The important interior spaces and finishes can vary depending on the building, and the approach will be different for different types of historic buildings. And so the approach that we would use, or that a project would have to use for converting a historic office building to residential, is very different than converting a historic warehouse to residential. And so just sort of knowing that up front, what kind of building you're working with, what are the historic characteristics of that particular building, and then working with that. And, you know, some buildings have a lot of historic fabric on the interior, and some have been completely gutted. And in projects that you're working with a building that's been previously gutted, you have a lot of flexibility for making changes and kind of doing what you want on the interior.
Perfect. Thanks for that, Emily. Quick question for John. John, you know, we know historic tax credits, federal, state, can be used for various types of ultimate asset classes. We've definitely seen a lot of historic hotels, for example, office buildings, housing, of course. Obviously, our listeners in this podcast, a lot about affordable housing. Have you seen an uptick maybe just in the environment or in converting historic buildings to affordable? Or what are you seeing out there right now, the types of projects you're working on?
Oh, absolutely. We work on a lot of affordable housing rehabs. In fact, that's most of what we do. We found that throughout across the ups and downs of the economy over the last decade, affordable housing rehabs are really the most reliant types of historic tax credit projects. Housing affordability is a big challenge in the Midwest, where Emily and I work, but also across the country. And the rehab of existing housing and the adaptive reuse of historic buildings for affordable residential use, it's really one of the most useful tools in our toolbox of addressing this housing affordability crisis. We're seeing affordable housing developers pair federal and state historic tax credits with low-income housing tax credits, with LIHTC credits, and other affordable housing incentives to see projects through that otherwise might stall. So in some cases, projects would not move forward, but for the historic tax credit programs, the federal and state levels. And our clients are looking at vacant public schools. Vacant hospitals is a really interesting building type that we're seeing more rehabs, where we're seeing more rehabs happening. And increasingly, we're seeing vacant office buildings that our clients are seeing potential opportunities for conversion to housing.
Yeah, I think the vacant office building, or distressed office building, that's sort of everyone is talking about the distressed office market. And so I think that's going to be a focus, I think, for a lot of developers going forward, and cities and the federal government trying to figure out ways to package incentives that will help developers to convert office buildings into residential. Mm. And the White House actually just released, as of Friday, a guidebook to office to residential conversions that pulls together all of the current federal incentives and funding options, and then outlines plans for additional funding that's specifically aimed at supporting these types of conversions. And it's just what everyone in our industry is talking a lot about right now. And historic tax credits will be a critical component in making those types of projects happen.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Jen and Emily. And kind of thinking about that, you know, looking forward or what's next, how do you see the field of historic preservation evolving? Are there trends, technologies, other legislation you kind of like to see? What do you see? What's next? Mm-hmm. Kind of, maybe I'll start with John.
Yeah, there's so much changing in the architecture and construction world that's impacting our work in historic preservation work and historic tax credit rehabs. Building technologies are evolving. There's more focus on sustainability, and historic preservation is definitely a huge part of that conversation that we're having right now. Building documentation is getting easier, so it's a lot easier to walk into a building and digitally document it with digital photography, of course, but also, you know, 3D modeling and drone photography. So that's making our lives easier in terms of documentation. It also makes it easier for the SHPO and National Park Service reviewers who we work with. It makes it easier to give them the necessary information that they need to understand a building that they're reviewing, because Park Service and SHPO reviewers don't necessarily visit these buildings. Sometimes they do, but part of our application process that we help our developer clients with is documenting a building, both at the beginning and the end of a project. So those technologies are changing. Also, SHPO and National Park Service are moving or have moved to digital submissions of historic tax credit applications. At least federal has, and I think most states have as well by now. That happened this past year. So we're moving away from paper submissions. So we're entering the 21st century. And we're hoping that these digital submissions will help the Park Service and the SHPO maybe speed up their reviews and approval so they're not drowning in piles of paper and physically printed photographs, that everything's going to be digital. So we hope it'll be more efficient for them to get us their feedback more expeditiously.
And I think on the legislative side, the federal historic tax credit is a really long-running and stable program, but it was in danger during the last round of major tax reform. It survived with some changes, but there is a bipartisan bill that's been introduced in Congress. It's called the HTC Go Bill, which has four proposed provisions to add value to the federal historic tax credit program and to improve access to the federal credit and incentivize investment, particularly for smaller rehab projects. For larger rehab projects, it's a little bit easier, but the credit is sometimes less of an incentive for smaller projects because it's harder to syndicate for smaller projects and there are more hurdles to utilizing the credit. So this HTC Go bill would increase the credit percentage to 30% for small projects that are less than $2.5 million, lower the minimum spending requirements. Right now, you have to spend 100% of the adjusted basis. If it's a new building owner, the purchase price minus the land, which is a big hurdle for a lot of developers or owners who are looking to do smaller rehabs. And then it eliminates the requirement that the value of the HTC must be deducted from the building's basis. It eliminates restrictions on nonprofits partnering on historic tax credit rehabs, which makes it easier for community health centers, local arts centers, affordable housing, homeless services, and others to take advantage of the federal credit. And then there's also a temporary provision in the House bill that would increase the HTC percentage from 20 to 30% for the next few years to boost the program even more. So we're asking that everyone in our industry and now the listeners here sort of make yourselves aware of the HTC Go bill and contact your representative or senator to urge them to pass the bill. We know things are really tough in DC right now for a lot of legislation, but there's bipartisan support for this bill and it would really make a big difference in how many projects can utilize this incentive.
Thanks. I mean, we always love new legislation that's out there to help. This is great stuff too. And obviously we're getting close to time here, but for our last question, could you share maybe a memorable success story on a project that had maybe some type of particularly positive impact on the community and what lessons can be learned from successful preservation efforts?
Yeah, we're really lucky to have worked on some really fantastic projects that have transformed communities. I have to say something about the Chicago Post Office is still my project. I'm still working on it, but for the past 5 years, which was a $1 billion adaptive reuse of a vacant downtown mail distribution facility in Chicago. And it's now a vibrant office community and has really transformed the area around the building and started to have sort of impacts sort of farther out. But I think that some of the most impactful projects have been smaller communities reusing historic buildings that really are important to those communities. Historic public schools, we work on a lot, historic hospitals, and a lot of those are now being rehabbed for affordable housing using historic tax credits and low-income housing tax credits. And one good recent example is the Maywood Baptist Home, which was a historic 1920s old folks home, that's what it was called, in Maywood, Illinois, outside of Chicago. And it had been vacant for years and was threatened with demolition. But we worked with a very dedicated and creative team to reimagine that vacant building for assisted senior living. And it's now a thriving senior community in the heart of Maywood. One other project that I think a lot about is the rehabilitation of the Cook County Hospital in Chicago, which was another big preservation win for advocates for preservation in Chicago because the building was threatened with demolition for a long time, but ultimately was converted to medical offices and a hotel to serve the Illinois Medical District. And the interesting thing about that project is it opened in 2020, the summer of 2020, right in the middle of the pandemic, which is not a great time to open a hotel. But the owners of the building ended up using the hotel rooms for temporary housing for nurses and other medical support staff who were coming from other areas to assist in the pandemic. And now that the hotel market has somewhat recovered and the medical offices there are open, it's really a thriving part of the larger medical district and has sort of really come to life.
Yeah. And you also asked about advice we give. We've already talked about get a historic tax credit consultant involved early already. I guess I'll say it again. We recommend any developers who are listening and are thinking of exploring historic tax credits, invest in your entire team early. If a developer is really committed to doing a successful historic tax credit project, invest in your team. So invest in a qualified historic tax credit consultant who has a track record of success working with similar projects and similar developers and investors. Invest in an architect, invest in contractors and engineers, attorneys, accountants who have experience with historic tax credits. It really helps make for a smoother process, a smoother federal and state historic application process when members of the team aren't arriving at historic tax credits cold. They've done this before. They have experience. It just makes it so much easier. And usually folks like us, historic tax credit consultants who work with a variety of different contractors, architects, investors, we can usually make recommendations to our developer clients on the types of team members they need.
And I would also say that not all historic buildings look historic. And so you would be surprised at the buildings that we have successfully navigated through the listing process for the National Register of Historic Places. So even if a building doesn't seem on its face to be a candidate for National Register listing and thus a candidate for a historic tax credit rehab, you'd be amazed. We're happy to look at at any building and not to pat ourselves on the back, but we've pulled some things through that, again, on their face would not be historic properties. And there's a great variety of buildings out there that are potentially eligible. And generally, the National Register listing is for buildings that are 50 years old or older. And, you know, not that I want to make anyone feel old, but that's 1973. So buildings that are post-war buildings, 60s, early 70s buildings are coming into the fold for historic tax credits. And so we're happy to look at any building and try to find a path forward for National Register.
Well, thanks, John and Emily. That was great. I mean, it strikes me as a higher level of importance on the early stages of this, given the complexities of all the different regulatory requirements and agencies that you're dealing with. So without ado, before we sign off, how can listeners get in touch with you?
Yeah, we'd be happy to answer any questions from your listeners. You can reach us, our team at Ramsey Historic Consultants, by visiting our website at ramseyhistoric.com. But thank you so much. This was so much fun.
Yeah, it really was.
That's it for this episode of Bushouse. A big thanks to Emily Ramsey and John Kramer from Ramsey Historic Consultants for joining the show today to cover a wide range of discussion items around preserving our historic buildings and how to navigate the complexities of historic preservation process and incentives. Once again, I'm Don Bernards.
And I'm Garrett Gibson. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. For additional resources around multifamily housing, check out BakerTilly.com. If you have a suggestion for the show, email us at buildabakertilly.com. That's BUILD@BakerTilly.com. See you next time on Buzzhouse.